Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or of course where you should get all your health podcasts, podcasthealth.com. Podcasthealth.com is the site that is probably the best for all health information. It's our home, podcasthealth.com. We're brought to you as usual by forlongevity.com. Go to their website, sign up for the free newsletter on longevity. And of course, lifefirstnaturals.com, the makers of Relisium, True Biotics, Bovine Colostrum, and Dye Rescue. Go to their website, lifefirstnaturals.com, to sign up for or to look for the randomized double-blind controlled trials on each of those. Remember, Relisium is when you're taking a GLP-1, it helps you with the nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and constipation. Amazing, it does both of those, but it does. 2 days before you take the shot, the day of, and 2 days after, you will feel much better, especially when you're stepping up the doses based on the data in the literature. Our guest today is Owen O'Kane. He is a master as one of the UK's leading mental health expert, if not the leading health expert. He's a Sunday Times best-selling author, a psychotherapist, a former NHS clinical lead, and that's hard to be because that means you are the leader of that field in psychology. And he makes these psychological tools easy and readable in this book, Addicted to Anxiety, How to Break the Habit. It's published for the first time on May 5th by St. Martin's Essentials, one of the great presses of all times. Dr. Okun, how did you happen to choose psychotherapy or psychology, psychoanalysis as your field?
It was interesting. So the earlier part of my career, I worked in palliative care, spent about 10 years working in palliative care. And the one thing I realized was that as much as you could have information and medication, drugs and treatments, the one thing I didn't feel fully equipped to manage well was psychology end of things. And when people got stuck and when they were struggling, so I managed to get myself onto a master's program. This was about 14, 15 years ago, and retrained then as a psychotherapist. And my career then went off in that direction. And, you know, my career evolved and developed. And my two specialist areas then became anxiety and trauma. They're the two areas that I'm most interested in. And then a few years ago, I got an opportunity to do a book, which fortunately did very well. From that, I've published four books, and Addicted to Anxiety is my latest.
It's strange that you say addicted to anxiety. We think of addiction to medicine or drugs or a person or food. A mental health thing, we don't think of as we're addicted to it. So tell us how you came up with that concept.
So one of the things I've noticed over the years, particularly around anxiety, is often people talk about anxiety and it's often treated as something happening to them. And there are very few conversations around an individual's relationship with their anxiety. What I noticed over the years was that many clients I worked with became very habitually addicted to the process of anxiety. So they would kind of become almost hooked on the thoughts. They would become almost dependent on the physiological experience. It would almost be an expectation. And the more I explored it, the more I began to realize was that there was actually an addictive component to the process of anxiety. Now, this might feel very different. And as you rightly say, it's different to addiction in the mainstream context. But I guess really anxiety in itself comes with a very strong promise, you know, and that is protection and safety. And if someone isn't feeling safe or struggles with uncertainty, then anxiety does form a habit because it's very difficult to let go of. You know, even if you think about anxious thoughts, there's something quite tantalizing about them. They will deliver a lot of content and people find it very, very difficult to disengage or disconnect. So I guess one of the things that I wanted to talk about was the addictive component and how easy it is to get hooked on the process of anxiety, and also to have the conversation that we often play quite a significant part in our own anxiety. And that's a conversation that we don't have often enough.
one of the things that the new GLP drugs, Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, Zepbound, that is semaglutide and tirzepatide, do is they stop seemingly food addictions and opioid addictions.
Yeah.
Do they stop addictions to anxiety or decrease them too?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question because I think some of the early research is beginning to look at whether there's going to be benefits for some of these drugs for mental health presentations. So it's probably too early to comment on whether we're going to have findings that show that actually there is positive correlation. But I guess for me, I never really see anxiety, you know, as a traditionally medical problem. And I think that's part of the challenge. Very often with the word addiction, you know, we do tend to quite medicalize it, whereas actually anxiety is often multifaceted. Yeah, there is a physiological component, but also people, you know, I often describe anxiety as that part of, we have a part that sometimes gets scared and frightened, and we need to form a relationship with that part. I mean, if I'm teaching or I'm working with groups of people, if I ask them how they feel about their anxiety, the majority of the time, most people in the group will have a very negative relationship with their anxiety. They see it as a bad thing, even though it forms a huge part of their life. And when you begin to explore that more, what you find is that helping people form a healthier relationship with their anxiety, with that part of them, can be really useful. And then you then begin to explore why they might be anxious. And there, it's very multifaceted. Yeah, you've got the physiological component, but it can be hormonal. It can be trauma linked. It can be because of backgrounds. It can be because of culture. I think the kind of the early conversations about whether drugs like Mounjaro can be used to treatment, I mean, I'd be very interested to see what the findings are longer term. But I guess in my experience, it's never one thing. So even though they may prove to be helpful, I don't think we should move away from the fact that, you know, anxiety needs to be worked with. You know, we need to look at the various aspects of anxiety, not just one singular component.
We're talking with Owen O'Kane, his website, owenocaine.com. And the book is Addicted to Anxiety, How to Break the Habit by St. Martin's Press. Owen is a psychotherapist. So, and your book talks about the five areas to tackle to help break the habit. Tell us a little bit about that.
The first thing for me before I even move to techniques with people is I always start with exploring what the relationship is with their anxiety. And I think very often there's something very powerful in if you can get people to relate to that part of them, that part of them that gets scared sometimes and feels uneasy, and you help them to build a kind of more calming, soothing relationship with that part. That for me is a very powerful inroad. And then I guess what you're doing is you're trying to educate people and help them to see how anxiety manifests for them. So very often that's in the thoughts, it's in the emotional states, it can present itself in the body. So you're teaching people how to recognize when anxiety moves in for them. And more importantly, rather than get kind of caught up in the anxiety and get entrenched in the thoughts or getting caught up in the physiological sensations, you're teaching people the art form really of standing back and becoming the observer and noticing that these things are happening, and noticing then that, you know, when they see that actually this doesn't define who they are, this is an experience they're having, then they can make decisions then about how they're going to manage this. And I often say that it's often powerful to start with the body, because, you know, most people will very quickly identify that they hold anxiety in their body somewhere. That could be the chest, it could be the tummy, it could be in their throat. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to teach the individual how to create space around that, so that when they feel the tension in the body, it's a powerful thing to release that tension, because automatically that will send a message to the brain. You know, as you know, we've got a part in the brain called our amygdala, which is like a fire alarm. It's a threat center. So when we kind of release a sense of tension in the body, that will send a message to the brain that there isn't any immediate danger or threat. And it helps regulate our brain so that we can get into a more rational state and, you know, activate that prefrontal lobe that helps us think more rationally in a more measured way. So for me, it's about kind of working step by step. I never believe in jumping in. I also never believe that anxiety is something to be fixed or to get rid of, because to have anxiety is sometimes useful. It's a human emotion. It's a normal human process. So we're never aiming. I know a lot of books and a lot of techniques talk about getting rid of anxiety. For me, it's about how you learn to work with your anxiety, how you learn to integrate it into your life. And more importantly, it's ultimately about anxiety isn't in the driving seat of your life. You're in the driving seat, but you learn to work with your anxiety and navigate it.
Explain a little more about work with anxiety. You mean try and keep a little of it to be more effective or to be warned? In other words, we live in times, if you look at the United States or Great Britain, there are security concerns, etc. I think it always helps to keep a little awareness. Is that what you're talking about? Give us a little more depth on that.
Yeah, I mean, probably the best way I can answer that question is, I mean, I grew up in Northern Ireland during that period known as the Troubles, when there was a lot of sectarian violence. When I grew up, you know, it wasn't until I left I realized that it was a very anxious environment. But actually, the anxiety that I experienced growing up was actually really useful because it protected me and it kept me safe and it helped me make sensible decisions about where I would go and what I would do. So I was on watch for danger, but rightly so. So I think in everyday life, you know, some degree of anxiety is useful and it's helpful. So it's, you know, it would be absolutely abnormal to believe that we shouldn't have anxiety, because actually some degree of anxiety is going to be important. But I guess really, if anxiety starts to become a dominant factor in your life and you're worrying unnecessarily a lot of the time, then it's problematic. I mean, if we think of a textbook definition of anxiety, it's an intolerance of uncertainty. So one of the key things with anxiety is learning to become more tolerant with not knowing. It's learning to become more tolerant with the uncertainty. And that for many people can be difficult at first. But once you help people see, okay, well, look, some degree of anxiety and worry can sometimes be useful, but actually if it becomes dominant, then that's going to get in the way of your life. And it's kind of worth remembering that some of the studies show that 90% of things that we worry about in life don't come to any full fruition. So it's kind of finding that balancing act and realizing that there are times actually when it's okay to let go and not get over involved with the anxiety.
Now, the other concept that I kind of liked in the book that I thought played a major role in the book was the concept of self-compassion.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think that has to be at the heart of, you know, whatever you're dealing with in life, whether it's anxiety, depression, you know, a breakup, a bereavement, you know. And I guess in my experience over the years, what I've discovered is that a lot of people give themselves quite a hard time. People don't go easy on themselves. I often say that most people wouldn't say to another person some of the things that they say to themselves. And I guess really it's about moving towards the anxiety with an openness and a compassion and an understanding that when it does manifest and when it makes itself present, it's never about battling with it or fighting it. It's understanding that it's moved in a way that it believes is helpful. So it's about, you know, you kind of, you know, acknowledging that and being grateful for that. And I think that can feel very counterintuitive and it can feel very odd at first, that actually you learn to form a much more compassionate, open relationship with this part of you. Because when that happens, then you're able to negotiate much more. It's a bit like human relationships. You know, if we have hostile relationships with people, we're not going to get very far. And it's the same with our anxious self. When we learn to be open and compassionate with it, then we can negotiate. And we can have that dialogue and we can kind of almost learn how to regulate and to soothe and to ease. And that's so, so important when you're managing anxiety.
I should remind people the book is called, and it's a wonderful book called Addicted to Anxiety, How to Break the Habit. It's published by St. Martin's Press, available now, obviously, May 5th, our author, and you can get to his website, Owen O'Kane, OwenOkane.com. Thank you very much for coming on the show. This has been 1281 of You, the Owner's Manual. We don't do enough on mental health, especially with how important it is. So I really appreciate you coming on, Owen.
No, it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Remember, we're sponsored by 4Youngevity.com, the number 4Youngevity, 4Youngevity.com. Go to their website to sign up for the free newsletter on the latest on longevity and why, in fact, of the 14 areas of research into the mechanism of aging, 5 have now moved into human trials. 1 is available now and seems to work very well for one of the three aspects of the mechanism of aging, you'll have to sign up for the newsletter or go to our Substack at Michael F. Roizen, MD. That's Roizen with a Z, roizenmd.substack.com to find out more. Thank you, the 50,000 of you who download us regularly. We appreciate it. It's why we do this and why we bring you great guests like Owen O'Kane. Thanks again. We'll be back next week. Remember, podcasthealth.com.